Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
And we are back with another adventure in history. So excited to welcome a guest back to our radio. First time on the podcast, though. Spotify and Apple Podcasts. If you don't already subscribe, you can. But we have Sara Matthews. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
The beloved.
The beloved, yes. Owner of Finware.
I think that's fair. She's smiling like she thinks I'm nuts, but...
Maybe a little bit.
You are beloved.
I don't. Well, hopefully a little bit.
I've never heard anybody say anything negative about you.
Well, no.
Ever.
Yes.
Thank you.
No.
I appreciate that's true. That.
That's not true of other people like me.
Oh, Mac. That director from the Historical Society.
I don't think I'm wrong on that.
That people say bad things about you?
Well, no. That too, yeah.
I've never, ever. You're right. So we're going to talk Finland, Finware, Scandinavian Festival, and what it's like growing up as a Goonie.
Aren't we past the Goonies at this point?
She just said, we just like 1 minute ago, said she's one of the original Goonies.
It was pretty articulate, and it was a nice sentiment. I've never heard worded quite that way, so
it's
pretty
true,
good.
Right.
Now she's worried. What did I say? How did I say it?
So we'll get to it.
So we get right to, you're doing something or you're not doing
something? I'm not doing something.
Okay, then we'll just get right to the history highlights and we'll get moving along here because this is going to be a good show. So these are, as always, icebreakers or things to talk about around the dinner table or at work. July 14th, tomorrow, things that happen on this day. 1789, the French revolutionaries storm the Bastille. French Revolution.
Yep, good.
All right, good?
Well, I mean, change.
They chop people's heads off.
Jeez.
Okay, there's a whole nother show there. Geez. 1850, the first public demonstration of ice made via refrigeration by Florida physician John Gorey. Ice.
Interesting.
I love ice in my drinks.
First public demonstration.
Yeah, because you don't want to show everybody in case it didn't work. You want to make sure it works. So then you take it outside and show everybody.
And for once, Florida does something good.
I know. I was very disappointed that it was Florida. Although it makes the most sense in Florida.
Florida makes our show a lot.
Yes.
I mean, they do a lot of historical things that are sometimes a little, you know.
No, I just like picking out Florida.
Yes, it is very easy.
I'm very open about that.
Yeah, sure.
My brother lives there, so
I'm there. Allowed, yeah.
And you live there, so all right. I thought we'd have more discussion about ice. All right, moving on. 1868, Alvin J. Fellows of New Haven, Connecticut, patents the tape measure. How do we feel about the tape measure?
Oh, it's important.
Big fan.
Are you a big fan? Okay. I never liked the big metal ones that like come out and then they like kind of get bent as they go back in.
Yes.
I guess for like materials or making clothes, the tape measure that's like really kind of.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Bendable.
Bendable. That's the word I'm groping for. All right. 1881. This is just for me. Billy the Kid is shot to death by Sheriff Pat Garrett. I almost said Pat.
Yeah, you did.
Pat Garrett. Sheriff Pat Garrett shoots Billy the Kid.
Oh, and he's not a kid.
He's not. He's young.
Right.
But he's barefoot and he's unarmed, except for he does have a knife.
Okay.
He was going out to cut some meat and he comes back into the room and it's all dark and he knows somebody's there and he says, Guinness. Because he thinks he's, you know, talking to the Hispanic person.
Mm-hmm.
And Pat Garrett just shoots him.
Oh.
At least allegedly. All right. 1913. Gerald Ford is born. Good. The often maligned by history, Gerald Ford. He doesn't make my top 10, but I don't think he's a bad guy.
His timing,
All right, 1918, Quentin Roosevelt, Theodore Roosevelt's youngest son, and he's also a pilot in the U.S. Air Service, is killed in action when his plane is shot down. 1918.
Oh.
It was a very sad day when my son was killed. All right, I do Teddy Roosevelt from time to time.
Yes.
All right, 1946, Dr. Spock publishes The Common Sense Book of Baby and Child Care.
Yes.
Does anybody read books anymore?
Yes.
Does anybody read this book? Because it was groundbreaking.
It was.
Yeah, I don't think anymore.
Well, I wouldn't read a book about raising children written by a man.
Right. Yes. So, good point.
I think
good point.
It was groundbreaking then.
That's true.
Because women weren't publishing books.
I will accept that wholeheartedly.
Yes.
All right. But then our history highlights, I think had the most impact on history and not always the best things, of course, but the biggest impact.
Mm-hmm.
1798. One of the most egregious breaches of the U.S. Constitution becomes federal law when Congress passes the Sedition Act, endangering liberty everywhere. While the United States is engaged in naval hostilities with revolutionary France, you know, the whole Bastille thing, known as the Quasi-War, Alexander Hamilton and congressional Federalists, those darn Federalists, took advantage of the public's wartime fears and drafted and passed the Alien and Sedition Acts without first consulting President John Adams. The first three acts took aim at the rights of immigrants. In 1798, immigrants.
I know.
They're all immigrants. All right. The period of residency required before immigrants could apply for citizenship was extended from 5 to 14 years. And the president gained the power to detain and deport those he deemed enemies.
Yeah.
President Adams never took advantage of his newfound ability to deny rights to immigrants. However, the Fourth Act, the Sedition Act, was put into practice and became a black mark on the nation's reputation. In direct violation of the Constitution's guarantee of freedom of speech, the Sedition Act permitted the prosecution of individuals who voiced or printed what the government deemed to be malicious remarks about the president or government of the United States. 14 Republicans, mainly journalists, were prosecuted and some imprisoned under the act. You can't say bad things about the president or Congress.
Oh, we could go in a deep dive on all that. And and we have talked about that, that it is so interesting how quickly a nation of immigrants really does limit.
Turn on immigrants.
Immigration.
Yeah.
Right. And how that happens and why it happens and when it happens. But yeah.
But separate from that is the you can't badmouth the government.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, I like freedom of speech.
And thank goodness we learned the lesson. And,
right.
And nobody's ever skated near that again.
Of course. on that, there's no...
Speaking of skating, I don't know.
No segue.
No segue there.
Other than we have a really lovely guest. It's Sara Matthews, owner of Finware, local historian. Thanks for being here again.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. So let's start with your roots here in Astoria. What brought your family here and what keeps you here?
So I was born in Astoria. So I can now kind of proudly say I think I'm a third generation Astorian. So my dad's grandparents immigrated here. And then my mom immigrated here in the 1960s from Finland. And so then my sister and I were born here. We grew up here, graduated from high school, but I did get out of town. I went to college at U of O. I studied in Germany for a year. I lived in Finland for a year. I lived in Eugene. I lived in Northern California, Southern Oregon.
My goodness.
I married a local guy. We ended up moving back and when our first son just before he was born. And we've been really happy. It's a great place to raise our kids. And it's been really nice being around family and friends.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we've been here since now we've been here about 25 years again.
What was it that brought your mom's family here? Since she's then for, I mean, that she had just, she was first generation.
Well, so I'm considered first generation on my mom's side, I guess, because she's the one. So she moved here as an adult.
Okay.
So she came here. She was hosted or sponsored by family in Nacelle. Like my mom's distant cousin sponsored her and she went to Clatsop Community College. She wanted to improve her English. So she lived with the bosses and he was the president of the college. So she was kind of like a nanny for them. So she lived for room and board and she graduated from Clatsop Community College. And then in the process, she met my dad and then her father passed away suddenly. So she went back to Finland for that. And she and my dad kept corresponding, and then my dad, I guess, proposed via snail mail. I'm not quite sure exactly how it happened. And they got married in Finland. My dad flew to Finland. He had never been overseas.
Oh, my goodness.
And so then they moved back here.
And was his family also from Finland?
So his grandparents came here from Finland also.
Okay.
So, but my dad didn't speak Finnish or anything. They were Swedish Finns, so they spoke Swedish.
Okay.
But my dad doesn't speak any Swedish either, so.
Yeah. I love that story. Proposing via paper.
Yeah, I'm not quite positive.
Yes.
But.
But either way, it was not arranged in person.
I mean, don't think so, because my mom was back in Finland. And, you know, even then, the phone calls were so expensive that you didn't just call or you know, you couldn't text or anything,
right,
or email.
That's so. A long wait, sending that letter.
Yeah.
And then you could just wait as long as you want to respond.
Right.
And what if the mail got lost? I guess she doesn't want to marry me and like move on with your life. That's amazing. I love that.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about, I'm fascinated. I've never been, but of course I've met a lot of Finnish people here, a lot with Finnish in their ancestry. So you visited Finland. Did you have expectations because of your family? I mean, did they tell you stories and you wanted to go to those places? What was it, meeting all of your expectations, or was it a letdown? Or just talk about a little bit your trips there.
Well, it's so I was raised, we would go to Finland about every 2 to 3 years. So it's almost like a second home to me.
Okay.
And then in the meantime, when we didn't go, my grandma would come here. So when I moved there, it was very natural for me. You know, and I blend in pretty well. I mean, they think I'm from Finland, and
right,
I can get by in the language. I'm not fluent by any means, but I can get by enough where they don't quite know where I'm from. They're like, that's a really weird dialect you got going on there. But
Did you speak it in your home growing up?
Yeah, to a point. But since my dad didn't speak it, it's hard. And then, you know, back in that time, you wanted to be normal and just speak English. You didn't want to speak any other language. You know, now I think people value second language, and I think it's very important. And I'm so jealous of people who are just bilingual like that. It's such a gift. So, you know, I'm okay at it.
Yeah.
And not as good as I'd like to be. But yeah.
But when you went and lived for a year, what did you do? Did you go get a job?
No, I was going to university.
Oh, you were.
So, okay. And it was a pretty good gig. I had already graduated from University of Oregon, so I was kind of, I could take whatever class I wanted. So I traveled a lot, and I didn't travel as much in Finland as I wish I would have, but we'd go to Russia a lot for the weekend, travel, you know, in Central Europe and Sweden and everything. So it was a really good time.
This was your gap year.
Yes.
But you still went to class.
Yeah. I still passed and got some credit.
Technically, it doesn't count as a gap year.
It doesn't.
She's actually taking a class.
I know.
Or two.
It's a kind of a cooler gap year. So you just go to Russia.
Yeah.
Talk about that. Like, you just cross the border and it's easy peasy. Like, you have your US passport.
Yeah. We would just take a bus. You'd have to go on tours. You couldn't just go there. So we'd have to have visas and everything. And most of the time, it was really easy. And I was never worried. There was one time we were coming back from, I think we went to Moscow, and we had been there during the coup when Yeltsin was president. And so there's tanks and everything. We have, you know, we don't really know what's going on. And when we came back, I think from that trip, might have been another one, we got detained. And you weren't supposed to bring rubles or anything like that. And of course, we always had something. And one of the guys we were with, they took him into a separate room and made him strip down to his underwear, and they searched him. But he was kind of the shadiest looking one of all of us. So
of everyone in your group, he's deserved it the most.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, and I was usually me, and then I was traveling a lot with these four other American guys. And another time we were in a hotel in, I think, St. Petersburg, and I would try to dress, you know, so I blended in. I didn't want to stand out as the American. And they would often think I was a prostitute because I was the only woman with these four men. You know, coming back to the hotel, and they would question me a lot. And I'd have to say, no, you know, I'm American also, and I'm a guest here. So that was always kind of a fun thing.
And you're on a tour, or you're going as a tour, but you don't have to stay with a group.
No, Finland had a really good relationship where you could go on these tours easily.
Okay.
And so that was, since we were in Finland already, it was much easier than I think coming from the United States or another country.
Sure.
So my mom actually took us to Russia in the early 80s. And that was really interesting. I'm glad she took us because it was so different then. You could only shop in certain stores and they really restricted where you went. So
because you weren't Russian.
Yeah, and it was Soviet Union then. It was very, you know, still very Cold War and all that.
And what are your mom's goals in taking you there? Yeah. Is it to see what it's like? Is it cultural? I want to take you to the museums? Or is it to get a better understanding of that world versus the United States world?
I think it was kind of all of that. My mom was very into history, and so she really pushed that on us. And I think just seeing what it was like. And I think I also really gained an appreciation how Finland did not become part of the Soviet Union, being one of the few bordering countries with Russia that retained its freedom. And when you would go from Finland and to Estonia, some of the Baltic countries, to see the difference is huge. We would do that too. We would go to Estonia in the 90s, and it's quite a difference, and it really made me appreciate that Finland was able to maintain that.
So what is the difference?
Well, when these, if you go to East Germany or something, nothing really was repaired much after the Second World War. You'd still see these buildings with bullet holes, and just the whole communist way of life was very different than the Western way, I guess. And they just didn't move forward, I think, like a lot of the other countries did. Finland, has a very high standard of living, and has been able to maintain its cultural identity. And I think some of these other countries, they were trying to be snuffed out a little bit. Like, it was kind of the secondary culture in these countries.
How fascinating.
It is fascinating because it shows just the different styles when it's almost the same geography, and yet one has a radical different standard of living. I mean, it's just sort of like Haiti, Dominican Republic that fascinates me. It's the same island. So why is it so different? Well, it has to come down to government and politics. And it's just strange when you have kind of the same resources.
Yeah.
So I applaud your mother. That's pretty amazing in that time period.
She
really wants you to experience that.
Yeah. I'm really glad she did. At the time I was this bratty, I think, eighth grader or something, just moody and beyond that. But I'm really glad that I got to do that now. I look back at it.
So what changes have you seen in Finland? I mean, because you're saying, here's this really strong country, and you're right about the quality of living. I mean, I think the rest of the world wants to emulate it, or doesn't, but we dream about it, right? I mean, you see all those stats all the time. And in Finland, they do this, and they live longer, and they do this, and they're happier. And what have you seen change, and what has stayed the same?
I think it's really interesting because I hadn't gone to Finland for, 15 years, I think, from before I got married. And then after I bought the store, I went. And there were huge changes then. When we were little, we would send our clothes back to Finland to my cousins, just to reuse it. And Finland, I would say most houses only had one car, if they had a car. And Finland has become very prosperous and very popular. And that's the other shocking thing to me, how popular Finland is. And so I think that's been one of the changes. I think they've always had a very good lifestyle that they really appreciate: summer and vacation time, family time. They work a decent amount of time. I mean, they work hard, but it's not these 40, 50-hour work weeks. They work, I think, 32 to 36 is their average.
Sounds lovely.
Their education system is amazing. I'm so envious of it. I wish my kids could have gone to school there, because it's just, or that we could emulate that. And the other thing I noticed, because I was just there last month with my oldest son, and just how popular Finland is. Everybody wants to go to Finland. And
yeah, I do. I want to go.
And even growing up here, we didn't, Finns weren't the, I don't want to say popular ones, but they were a little bit looked down upon, I would say.
So what's the pecking order growing up here in Astoria? Finns, Norwegians, how does everybody rank?
I think Finns were kind of the bottom. I mean, you'd hear the most jokes about them, and Finns are a little different. I'll admit that. And their language, of course, is very different, but in just their mentality and how they act, they're very introverted, basically. They're not real outgoing. So I'd say the Swedes and Norwegians were the highest.
Wow. All right.
And I'd say Finns too.
I've never thought about that before.
Generally speaking, the Finns were the fishermen. They were the timber working in the forest. Like, they were the, boots to the ground type of, again, generally speaking.
Right.
But yes, that's of course has evolved over all these years. So from you growing up and being a teenager here, then you had three sons. Mm-hmm. What was that? What was the differences that you saw there? Did they go to the same school? Did you go to Astoria and then they went to Astoria?
Yeah, they did. And even my dad went to school here also.
Oh, you know, I love that.
And so I had some of the same teachers my dad had, which is really kind of scary. But what had changed, I know we don't have the neighborhood schools anymore, so that's right. Kind of unfortunate. But I think overall, I think the schools have improved here. I really appreciate our schools. I think we have a good administrators and teachers here who really care about the kids, and the opportunities that there are here in Astoria is great. I'm always impressed with that. So I think my kids might have gotten a better education than I did. And I don't think they were quite as naughty as we used to be when we were in school here. But
let's talk about naughtiness. For So growing up in Astoria, it's a small-knit community, and especially if you identify, I'm a Finn or whatever. Talk a little bit about what kind of mischief did you and your friends get into, and what was that like compared to what perhaps mischief today is?
Well, when we were younger, you know, it was that typical, we would be out all the time. When I was, up until I was 10, we lived up on Kensington, and which was a great neighborhood, so we'd be out on our bikes and just running around, and you know, we'd walk to Tapiola, we'd walk to the Y. The Y used to be a pool yet, so we'd go to the Y, and we were just, you know, going wherever. And then in high school, that was just a different, you know, there were the, you'd go looping, and you'd go out to the rock pit, and you'd do things like that. And, you know, there were these big parties and stuff. And back then, they didn't quite... the drunk driving thing, which is a huge change, and I'm so happy because I just think of how many close calls there were. Mm-hmm. And so I think people are a little more safe. I mean, there's still parties and everything, but people are more aware of that. So I'm quite...
Statute of limitations has passed.
Okay, I'm just trying to really not...
She's like, what do I want to admit to?
Yeah.
My boys are going to listen to this.
Exactly. So I do want to make sure, because we've got 6 minutes left. Mm-hmm. So you have a pretty amazing store, and there's a pretty amazing story behind the whole store.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about just how you got into it, how you purchased it, and what this niche market is that you have that is so special and such a part of Astoria fabric.
I feel very fortunate to own Finware and have purchased it from the original owners, Darlene and Dorothy. They originally wanted my sister and I to buy it because they were sisters. And my sister, she had another job. She had a real job, and I was kind of floating between things. Job. And so it's such a unique store. People are always amazed when they come in. They're always like, why is this here? And then you explain the history or, you know, why, what, you know, it's a real... almost a cultural center in a sense. It's not a normal store. And so we're constantly telling the history of Astoria or the background with the Finns and the other Scandinavians here and why they came here. So it's, I just feel really fortunate because if I could do my university life over, I think I'd like to be a cultural anthropologist and go around just interviewing people and getting history and local history from people, like people's stories. And so we get to hear a lot of that in the store. And so it's neat to do.
That's what I was curious on, that I do think, and I wanted to ask, what percentage, just ballpark guess, come in and they're like, why is there a Finnish store here? Or how many come in and go, oh my gosh, I'm part Finnish. Mm-hmm. I mean, what is that interaction like, and how many on either side of that?
I would say, I mean, probably half the people, really. I mean, there's... I feel fortunate that we are getting those people who have the Nordic background who are interested and want to come see. But then there's people who just want to come see it, what it is. And I think it just is part of Astoria. And it's another way to help tell the story of Astoria. I mean, we do have the Nordic Park now, which I think is great. But I wish there was a little more. People don't. There's one little plaque in Uniontown about the Finnish influence, and people don't understand that Astoria had the largest Finnish population on the West Coast. So I think that's a huge thing. and that you really had to speak Finnish downtown. All the business owners did to get that Finnish customer business.
When you were saying, so it was 1987 that these two sisters started Finnware.
Yeah.
And tell us a little bit about that, because that was a tough time to open a business.
Yes.
Two women.
Yeah, especially, yeah, they told me that as women, they could not get a bank loan, which just floors me.
1987.
Yeah. I thought, oh, you know, 80s, no problem. Right. But yeah, they really had a hard time. And so I'm really proud of them for that, that they could do that. I think it was Bank of Astoria that finally gave them.
Oh, there you go.
The loan. So it was a local bank.
Sherry Folk took care of
that. That was right. That's right. I think it was Sherry that, you know, said, hey, we can do this. And yeah, so, and they just opened it on their own. And there were three other Scandinavian stores, I think, at that time, but no Finnish store, which I thought was interesting. And right. Finns were the largest population here. So, and it started as a tiny little store, and then they moved one, and then we've been in this location, I think, since like 92 or something.
And since you took over, you also opened another small shop, you said, in Portland.
Mm-hmm.
So Nordic Finnware, and that's at Nordia House.
Yeah. So that's, it's over kind of, it's considered Portland, but it's, I'd say it's almost more like Tigard. It's by okay. Washington Square. And yeah, Nordia House has a cultural center, Broder restaurants there. We're there. Yum.
Perfect.
They do exhibits and concerts and things, and there's this big, huge troll there that you can go see. So,
oh, fun!
Yeah, so it's a challenge, but I'm glad we're there. It's a good place for us.
Did they reach out to you to come to there, or how did that evolve?
Kind of somebody within the organization. They had done a little Christmas store, and so we did a pop-up shop for Christmas for 3 years. And then I told them, if you want me back, I want a permanent spot. I don't want to do this right. just for a month. Yeah, it was a little too much. So it's worked out well. And I have two women who happen to be from Finland who work there. So that's worked out really well, too.
How exciting.
So what is your favorite item that you carry or most unique? And then what is the most popular thing that you sell that you just can't keep in stock?
I think our favorite thing, or my favorite thing, is the food, the candy. And I've been able to bring in a lot of candies that they couldn't get before that I know are popular in Finland, are really good. So I think it's that kind of answers both your questions, that it's my favorite thing and it's what we sell the most of is the food, just the candy.
They're fantastic stocking stuffers for people that don't live here.
Oh, yeah.
I bought this locally.
Right.
Yeah.
And the people that come off the cruise, right, mm-hmm. they can grab
yeah. And it is really good. It finished. I mean, the chocolate's really good. I always think if it doesn't sell, I'll eat it. So I'm okay with it. It's fine.
It's not a bad thing. So in 30 seconds or less, what keeps you here in Astoria?
I think the community, the people, and the uniqueness. I've always said Astoria is a little bit of a twilight zone, but in a good way. You always find some tie to Astoria. And the people like that I grew up with and that I continue to meet and see, I really love our town. It's just one in a million, and you don't find many places like this. So,
well, you are one in a million, and your store is one in a million, and both are an important part of Astoria and the fabric that is Astoria. Thanks for listening. Go make some history, and we will catch you next week.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.